and welcome into a Thursday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 by checking out our podcast. It's available wherever you get your shows. Just search for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. Tap the subscribe button and you'll get a new program delivered each and every weekday morning. Well, good Thursday morning to you. Hopefully you bared out pretty well yesterday with the nasty storms that rolled through midday. Fortunately, things didn't materialize as bad as they could have, but saw some pretty wild video from a Baldhead Island of deck chairs and deck boxes and things being blown all over the place with some of those nasty storms that rolled through. So hopefully it fared well with that, and we'll keep an eye on the weather. It looks like things will be pretty good over the next couple of days. So we've got a huge story here locally this morning, and it's not a news story. It's something that has been discussed for many years, and unfortunately, because of what I'll call lack in terms of leadership in the past, New Hanover County, the city of Wilmington, and I'll argue all of southeastern North Carolina is in a very precarious position this morning, and it's the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge that we're talking about. The Cape Fear Memorial Bridge, which is the southernmost bridge that connects New Hanover County, the city of Wilmington, to the rest of the state of North Carolina, has been in operation for quite some time now. You go back to the late 1960s when it first opened. The type of bridge that it is, it's a fixed-span drawbridge. With that, everybody was under the same impression. Everybody knew that this bridge was going to have a lifespan of which it has. And so the smart thing to do would have been 10, 15 years ago, would have been the process of figuring out what to do with the bridge. But because that didn't happen, we are now at a position in which the bridge is at the end of its useful life. Now, let me state that it is safe to drive on. It's not crumbling to pieces. It's not falling into the river below, but it's at the end of its usable life. The maintenance cost, the repairs of that bridge continue to exponentially rise every time maintenance has to be done. And there is the risk, the concern that it gets stuck in the up or down position. Obviously, if it gets stuck in the up position, that's a much bigger issue due to the age of the bridge and the lack of availability of parts and maintenance to be done on it. Now, DOT, to their credit, continues to do maintenance on it. They continue to do inspections. And again, it is safe. But it is becoming a very, very big problem with a massive price tag that is going to take years to complete. But if I snap my finger right now and said, okay, we're going to start construction today on the bridge, we're looking at likely 3 to 5 years before construction is complete. This is not going to be a rapid process like you see with, you know, neighborhoods popping up where one day you drive by it, they're clearing the land. Seemingly the next day, you've already got homes built. Or the frames or the structures. This is going to be a multi-year, very lengthy, and it could be longer than 5 years for this start to finish. And we're not even at the start yet. There's not even a plan that has been approved upon. There's not even an idea as to when construction would actually begin on this bridge. So with that, we've got a couple of different details this morning, a couple different threads that we're tracking. The first is the cost increase. The bridge replacement project is listed as part of the North Carolina Department of Transportation's State Transportation Improvement Program, or STIP, which we've talked about in the past. STIP has a checkered history, a checkered past. It is not a great funding formula, and it, unfortunately, the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge has never risen to the level where it has made it on the state STIP plan. Until just a couple of years ago, where now it has finally risen to it. But the biggest issue is the cost. The total estimated project is now $1.1 billion. Let me repeat that for you again. The estimated completion construction cost for a new southern bridge to replace the Cape Fear Memorial is now $1.1 billion. And as part of the application process, NCDOT listed the 135-foot fixed bridge design option for consistency needs. Now, we are learning more from the DOT. We learn from an individual with the Department of Transportation, from not only an engineer, but from other individuals. And the DOT says this, quote, "While we are still considering different design options to accommodate vertical clearance needs based on the direction from our federal partners, the 135-foot tall fixed span option that is included in the draft State Transportation Improvement Program is now projected to cost $1.1 billion. The cost is largely attributed to refining design and inflation impacts on materials." Now, I understand inflation is a real thing. I'm not going to argue that it's not. I've spent years talking about it. But the original previous cost was around $450 million. Inflation did not cause that to go to $1.1 billion. That's absurd. It says NCDOT will continue to work with its partners at the WMPO, that's the Wilmington Metropolitan Planning Organization, to move the project forward and continue to pursue the completion of any necessary environmental documents. The development is on track to finish those documents, not to begin construction, but to finish those documents in 2026. So the construction, break ground, won't happen until 2027, 8, 9, 30. I mean, who knows? "The next step in the design process is for the U.S. Coast Guard and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to determine the height of the new bridge. They need to have that done by March of this year, so within the next couple of weeks, and we'll continuing to watch that." So a massive increase in cost. And with that, there's some concerns and questions this morning about federal funding. Over the summer, the project was awarded $242 million by the Biden-Harris administration as part of the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, but that has now been put on pause. The North Carolina Department of Transportation Communication Officer confirmed to WECT News yesterday his office learned of the federal pause on all United States Department of Transportation discretionary grants during a February the 26th executive order that came in from the Trump administration. The communication officer, Andrew Barksdale, said to WECT News yesterday, quote, "We are working with our federal partners to determine when the grant for the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge could move forward." This comes after Barksdale told WECT News earlier this week that prior to the February the 26th executive order, that DOT had not been directed to pause or hold any work and that the planning phase of the project was on schedule. Back on February the 24th, the executive director of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization also told WECT that the project was not set to be impacted by the Trump's administration's potential federal funding freeze. He told WECT at the time, quote, "Any temporary funding freeze should not significantly impact the bridge project. The funding obligations through the Large Bridge Project Award, which is through the Federal Highway Administration's Comprehensive Bridge Investment Program, would not be available until 2026. So there's a lot of nonsense that you've probably seen on social media over the last couple of days about how the reason that we're not going to get a new bridge is because of Trump. This is the conversation. This is some of the comments that I've had the pleasure of reading on social media over the last couple of days. And again, let's look at who actually needs to be put in the crosshairs here. Who needs to be honed in on and who needs to accept the blame for the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge? It is local and state leaders, and I would argue federal leaders, that have allowed this to get this far down the trail. The bridge is already at the end of its life. Everybody knew this bridge had between like a 65 and 75 year lifespan. This was not a surprise. This was not a shock. This did not pop up out of nowhere. Everybody was aware of what this bridge was, what the lifespan was, and what needed to be done to make sure that a replacement was timely and in place. And unfortunately, lackadaisical leadership, dragging of the feet from local, state, and federal officials on this project have caused it to get to the position that it is right now, where the bridge is already at the end of its lifespan, and it doesn't seem like construction is going to start for at least another 2, if not 4 years. So the pearl clutching that you see on social media over how the bridge is not happening now because of Trump, the bridge is not happening because of a potential pause on $242 million, is complete and total BS. As the executive director of the WMPO notes, Mike Kozlowski, this money was not going to be available and at least for another year. U.S. Senator Tom Tillis weighed in on this, telling WECT that the funding for the bridge is going through the review process. However, he noted it is not in danger of being removed. Wilmington City Council members told WECT they were first notified of the pause in federal funding before the City Council meeting on Tuesday. That took place earlier this week. Wilmington Mayor Bill Saffo said, quote, "We've never seen anything like this. This is a pretty significant pause for a pretty significant amount of money for a much-needed transportation initiative. We hope that money's going to be there, but right now, who knows?" And I like Mayor Saffo. I think he's been a very good mayor for the city of Wilmington overall. But for him to say we've never seen anything like this is just not true. You have a new administration in Washington, D.C. They are putting projects and grants on temporary pauses so they can figure out where the hell all this money is going. And the idea that a project like this is going to be canceled, I think, is just nothing more than fear-mongering. I really, truly believe that. It's nothing more than fear-mongering. Yes, it is a pause, but the money's not going to be available for another year. Now, if the funding gets cut, I will have a completely different attitude about this. If the funding gets cut, that's a different ballgame. That's a different animal. But that's not what we're talking about this morning. We're not talking about funding being cut. We're talking about a temporary pause on money that is not going to be available for at least another 12 months. So I know that this is politically in favor for the Democrats, so they can go on Facebook and X and comment about how there's not going to be a new bridge and it's Orange Man's fault, because that's, of course, the only thing that the left can point at. But it's not based in any sort of fact or reality. There is no indication that this project is going to be canceled. Tom Tillis, who, whether you like him or not, is a very influential figure in Washington, D.C., when he says that the bridge is not in danger of being removed, I assume we should trust him. I think it's fair to trust what Senator Tillis is saying. And again, regardless of whether you like him or not, he has advocated for this bridge. He has consistently talked about it. We've had conversations with him in the past about it. He's publicly spoken about it. So I don't think there's an issue there. So going back to Tuesday night, the Wilmington City Council had a meeting, and they were already set to address a resolution brought forward by council member Celette Andrews, one of the new Democrats on City Council, asking the council to formally support the 100-foot bridge option over the 65-foot and the 135-foot option. Democrat Celette Andrews claimed that the 100-foot option would have the least impact on surrounding homes and businesses. However, Andrews' resolution did not move forward during the meeting. Mayor Bill Saffo offered a new one and pushed the one proposed by NCDOT, the U.S. Coast Guard, and the Army Corps of Engineers, which was to first analyze potential negative impacts on community members and businesses in the city's historic district. And the resolution did not offer support for a specific size bridge, and that passed unanimously 7-0. We're just still at this point looking at analyzing community impacts. I remember, and even in my early days of doing the radio show here in Wilmington, which was 2021 or 2, I don't remember what year it was, these conversations were happening. So at least 2 or 3 years ago, if not more. And we are still at a point where we have not done any sort of analysis on the potential impacts on the community as a whole. Now, I know various studies have been done. I know that that's happened. So what are we analyzing right now? Negative impacts on community members and businesses in the city's historic district? What about like getting a game plan forward to figure out how the hell we're going to get this thing built? I mean, folks, we are behind the ball on this already. The bridge is already at the end of its usable lifespan. Maintenance costs are going to skyrocket on this bridge in the years to come. They already have. And there is the possibility that this bridge, not fear-mongering, not trying to stoke any sort of, you know, crazy conspiracy theories, but because we're not even in the beginning in the process of discussing when this replacement's going to happen, there is a possibility that there becomes an issue structurally with this bridge before a new one is built. We saw last year the impacts of the major closures of the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge. When the struts were being replaced and the steel deck was being replaced, I mean, it completely bogged down traffic and made it almost impossible to drive between New Hanover and Brunswick County during rush hour. You had businesses changing their hours of operation because one of the bridges was closed. And so extrapolate that out to a full-time long-term closure. Right? When it happened the last time, it was what, like 6-8 weeks for each side? Imagine it for months on end with no solution to fix it in the future. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen, but there is the possibility that as the life of this bridge continues to deteriorate and decay, that something like that does happen. And so we need to get off of all of the analysis and your potential negative impacts on community members. I'm past that at this point. We need a new bridge. You know what's going to have a negative impact on community members and businesses in the city's historic district? Not having a southern access to the city of Wilmington. Not being able to actually drive into the city. Because you can guarantee, and we saw this last time, when the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge was closed and you had to take the Isabel Holmes or I-140 and go way around, we saw that there was a huge impact on business in Wilmington. Individuals from Leland and Brunswick Forest weren't going to sit in an hour and a half worth of traffic to come to downtown Wilmington to grab something to eat. They're just going to stay over in Brunswick County, as they should. It doesn't make any sense. Why would you go through that much hassle, that much headache, just to grab something to eat or grab a drink? It doesn't make any sense. So to me, that's the negative impact that we need to be talking about. Now, we did get an update on this from New Hanover County as well. I'd like to read to you this morning a post that was loaded up on X yesterday afternoon from Dane Scalise, a member of the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners. He wrote this: As a New Hanover County Commissioner, I advocate for our county and its citizens at every available opportunity and to every possible elected figure at the state, local, and federal levels. That's a big part of my job, and I take that responsibility very seriously. To that end, I just returned from conducting such advocacy in Washington, D.C., alongside a bipartisan group of my fellow commissioners. We spoke to Senator Ted Budd, Senator Tom Tillis, and Congressman David Rauser about some of the kitchen table issues our community is facing, including those related to beach renourishment, disaster aid, clean water, preservation of clean space, example, the western bank of the Cape Fear River, and yes, funding for the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge replacement. Because there's been a lot of discussion and concern locally about the CFMB replacement funding being paused, I want to specifically report that both Senators Budd and Tillis made clear that they sincerely believed that the previously announced $242 million grant was not in danger of being rescinded. They described the pause as a normal occurrence when administrations change. There is a review process in place, but worthy projects such as the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge replacement are not in the proverbial crosshairs. They assured us, along with Representative Rauser, that they are fully committed to protecting this source of funding for this critical piece of future infrastructure. And further to that point, they were receptive when I explained that even further funding should be provided, if at all possible. Thank you to our federal representatives for taking the time to meet with me and my colleagues, and thank you for recognizing how important New Hanover County is to both our great state and nation. Phenomenal post there from Commissioner Dane Scalise. If you're not following him on X, you should be doing so, keeping up to date with what's going on locally at Dane Scalise, S-C-A-L-I-S-E on X, if you're not following him there. A great post. He was up in D.C. He's got the pictures to back it up and to prove it. It appears that he was up there with Rob Zappel and Stephanie Walker, and pictures of him meeting with Tillis, meeting with Rouser, meeting with Bud, having this discussion and getting these things discussed and worked through. But let's just wipe all of that clean for a second. Let's look at something else, a huge practicality of this story. As I mentioned at the top, the cost has increased to an estimated $1.1 billion. The grant from the federal government is $242 million. Where is almost $900 million, if not over $900 million, going to come from? DOT doesn't have that kind of money. New Hanover County doesn't have that kind of money. The city of Wilmington doesn't have that kind of money. As it stands right now, irregardless of whether the federal funding is paused or not, this is money's not is a drop in the bucket for the cost of the project. We're talking about a $1.1 billion bridge replacement. DOT, nobody has the extra money to make up the difference. And so that's going to bring back forth the conversation that we had last year, which is the serious consideration of a toll option, which will be, I believe, detrimental and a complete and total disaster for the city of Wilmington and New Hanover County, as well as Brunswick County. But it's the only way that this is going to move forward without a serious infusion of cash from the feds. Unless the federal government's willing to dole up at least, in my estimation, another $500 to $600, if not $700 million, there's not a chance in hell this bridge is going to get built. Nobody's got the money to cover the costs. $900 million would completely drain the entire STIP for the entire year for one project. The STIP is responsible, the State Transportation Improvement Program is responsible for all road construction projects across the state. They're not going to drain it all on the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge. It's just not going to happen. It's not practical. So maybe we're putting the cart a little ahead of the horse here. We still have a major funding problem that needs to be discussed. I'm not going to sit here and pretend and act like I have the answer this morning, because I don't. But unless the federal government's going to come up with this money, I don't see how this bridge ever gets replaced, unless private industry comes in and tolls it. Now, that, to me, is a possibility. That discussion has come back and forth. We've seen local officials speak out against the tolling option, but with the cost that it is right now, $1.1 billion, that's probably going to be back on the table. And as much as you might disagree with that and think that that's a terrible idea and not good, and I would agree with you, I think it would be incredibly detrimental to our community. If the option is toll bridge or no bridge ever, I guess toll bridge is a better option. I hate to be in that position. That's not going to be my first level of advocacy. But if the option is you're not going to get a bridge built because nobody has $900 million to fund the project, or some private industry comes in and builds a toll bridge, that's probably going to be it. And I'll recap what I mentioned at the beginning. This should have been dealt with years ago. There is no excuse as to why the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge project is at the status that it is right now. Local, state, and federal governments should have dealt with this a decade ago, when they had time, when they had a runway, when they could have figured things out. They're at a period right now where the bridge has reached its end of its useful life, maintenance costs are skyrocketing, and now their backs are up against the wall. And what does that mean? It potentially means that a bad decision gets made, and that we're in a position where the only option is to go with something like a toll bridge, because the federal funding might not be there. I think there's a very strong possibility of that. We've seen the shakeups. We've discussed the new administration and their ideas of cracking down on federal spending, not indicating that the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge is not a worthy project. It obviously is. But as I've discussed, sacrifice has to be made. And unfortunately, that sacrifice has consequences. The federal government is bloated. The federal government pisses money away like nobody else's business. And eventually that comes to an end. And unfortunately for Wilmington, unfortunately for New Hanover County and for the other local municipalities, that might be coming to an end right when we need it the most. But unfortunately, actions have consequences. And the fact that this was not dealt with a decade, if not more, ago is a huge, huge failure on the behalf of local government. This should have been discussed. And I know that there was discussion of the third bridge option, the Sky Bridge that was going to be built south of the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge. But none of that stuff ever materialized. And we're still at a period of time where we don't even know what the design is. We're still discussing and doing various analyses of whether it's going to have an impact on the downtown historic district. We're not even talking about putting shovels in the ground. We're not even talking about pile driving into the Cape Fear River to build support. So we're not even close to that. We're probably 4 years from that happening. Plus, then the 3 to 5 year construction of the bridge itself. So for long-term members of New Hanover County, people that have moved here and want to make it their home, this discussion, this conversation is not going to go anywhere anytime soon. It is a complete and total mess over the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge. These things need to be dealt with sooner because now we have no bargaining chips. We have no leverage. We are at a period of time where we essentially have to take whatever we can get. And that's not a place you want to be from the standpoint of negotiating. That's just not where you want to be at all. So we'll keep an eye on the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge as we continue to welcome elected officials onto the program. We'll bring it up. We'll talk with them and bring you the latest details as soon as we get it right here on the Nick Craig Show. We've got a lot of other news to get into this morning, including some changes coming to DEI at the state level that could have an impact on local school districts. Plus, two federal buildings in Wilmington are part of DOGE's cost-cutting plans. Some leases set to be terminated there. Got a lot of other news to get into this morning as well. As the Nick Craig Show rolls on, I want to remind you that if you appreciate and enjoy listening to the show, whether it's live 7 a.m. weekday mornings on YouTube, Rumble, and X, or via podcast, I encourage you to support the show. You get access to bonus content, including daily show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Greatly appreciate everybody that has come aboard over the almost 2 months that the show has been rocking and rolling. Appreciate your support. Patreon.com/Nick Craig. You can visit that now and subscribe to the show. $5, $10 a month if you believe that you are getting some value. We'll dive into some of that other statewide and national news coming up here in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show on a Thursday morning. Thanks for joining us live or via podcast. Well, we continue to track diversity, equity, and inclusion. We brought you updates earlier this week on Senate Bill 227. That is eliminating DEI in public education. That was introduced in the North Carolina General Assembly. One of the key sponsors, Senator Michael Lee. He's our state senator here across the vast majority of New Hanover County. And as we look at what's going on at the federal level, as we look at what's going on nationally, DEI is coming to an end. Irregardless of whether you like it or not, Democrats, and I continue to bring this up and I will, Democrats have had years to litigate this issue publicly. They have had years to convince the American people, to convince voters that these DEI policies, diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, are good for the future going forward. They have had years to litigate this in the public sphere, and they failed. Because what was supposed to be DEI, actual diversity, actual inclusion, actual equality, has not come to fruition. These organizations, these offices, these DEI, this, that, and the other, these groups have been weaponized by the radical left. They have been taken over by individuals with far left political ideologies, and those individuals have no interest in increasing diversity, equity, and inclusion. They have no interest in actually doing the stated goal of the entity. I mean, it's right in the name. The acronym is DEI. Yet what have we seen come out of DEI? We've seen that we now teach kids in our public schools that based on their skin color, based on their race, they are either an oppressor or they are oppressed. We've seen that the teachings of the founding of America is rooted in racism. and that our country is inherently racist, always has been, and always will be. That based on your sex, you're part of some meritocracy. One person is better than the other based on that. Well, why the hell would we be teaching young individuals that that's the founding of our country, that based on their skin color, they're an oppressor, or based on their skin color, they're forever going to be oppressed? We live in America. We live in a country where if individuals go forward with trying to live their life, busting their ass, working hard day in and day out, they can achieve unbelievable terms of accomplishments. They can generate unbelievable amounts of wealth for themselves for generations going forward. If you put your mind to something, if you work hard, that's the American dream. That's the American system. But that's not what's being taught, because these offices have been weaponized by the radical left, plain and simple. I am ecstatic that DEI is being stripped out both in the public and private sector as we speak this morning. And we've had this discussion a lot over the last couple of weeks. And apparently my discussion made it to the level of a city council meeting. I would like to take you back to Tuesday night and some comments at the closing of the Wilmington City Council meeting from Councilman Kevin Spears, who was listening to the program earlier this week. Take a listen.
One more thing. I was so thank you to all the students and all the teachers and the invitations. I just so happened the other day clicked on a popular, I guess I'll say he's popular, conservative radio host the other day who was talking about the DEI initiatives and how grateful and happy he was to see what I'll call an attack on diversity, equity, and inclusion in our nation right now. But he didn't provide any facts as to the wrongings of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think people have to open their mind as to what diversity, equity, and inclusion is. It's not just, of course, you know, it's not just about black people. It's about diverse, a diverse group of people. It's about being welcoming. It's about presenting opportunities for people. And so I am really displeased with where we're going in this country. It seems that we're going backwards, and we should be going forward in 2025. So I'll be a part of every initiative to keep diversity, equity, and inclusion alive, not only in this nation, but especially in the city of Wilmington, North Carolina. Thank you.
And I appreciate Councilman Kevin Spears' comments. And when he says I'm in favor of diversity, equity, inclusion, so am I. I think if you polled the American public and asked them if they were in favor of the actual meaning of diversity, the actual meaning of equity, the actual meaning of inclusion, you would find the exact same thing. Wide swaths, vast majorities of the American public would be in favor of that. But what is not discussed by Councilman Spears is the underlying political narrative that is being driven by these departments, being driven by these offices. And I'm sorry, but you are never going to have me agree to teaching individuals in public schools that they are either oppressed or an oppressor based on their skin color is bringing us forward as a country. He says he's concerned about going backwards. He doesn't want to see that. Everybody is in agreement with that. Nobody wants to see us go backwards. The strides that have been made over the last 100 years in America are remarkable. They've never been done by any other society in history. Nobody wants to see that rolled back. So how is it that we're teaching individuals in public schools that they need to be judged based on their skin color, based on their race? How is that not going backwards? That's what's literally being taught in these DEI departments. That is the kind of liberal nonsense that is being squeezed out of these programs. I don't subscribe to that. I don't agree to that. If you cut out all the liberal nonsense and get back to actually providing opportunities for individuals, regardless of who they are, regardless of their socioeconomic background, regardless of their race, regardless of their sex, regardless of their religion, I'll be the first one online cheering. But that's not what's happening. It's been weaponized and taken over by the left. They use it as a tool to push a political narrative, to push things like America is inherently racist. What is the benefit of teaching something like that? Can somebody explain the benefit of indoctrinating our young individuals with that notion, with that concept, with that idea? Tell me how that moves us forward in regard to racial relations in America. I'm all open. Explain to me how that heals the racial divide that we always hear about, that doesn't explicitly pit individuals against each other based on race. You can't, because that's what's happening. You can have diversity. You can have equity. You should have inclusion in all of these things inherently. But when you create departments and then turn them over to progressive radical leftists to operate and run, lo and behold, what happens? Those organizations start puppeting and parroting liberal ideologies. It's not a political issue. It's an America issue. We are setting our children up for failure with these teachings. We are pitting them against each other at 6, 7, and 8 years old based on their skin color. What are we thinking? And I know the response, that's not actually happening. That's not actually going on. Well, what do you say when children come home with worksheets that express these very same ideologies? What do you say when little Jimmy comes home from school and is asked about how his day was, and he tells his parents that he learned today that he was an oppressor based on his skin color, or that he was oppressed based on his skin color? That's what's happening. There's documented examples of it. I don't have the text messages anymore, but going back just a couple of years ago when I was talking about this on the radio, I had multiple people email and text me in screenshots of pieces of paper that their kids came home with that showed that exact same very thing happening in the New Hanover County public school system. So save me the breath that it's not actually happening. You can bury your head in the sand and claim it's not, but it is. There's evidence of it. These programs are detrimental. If you cared so much about diversity, equity, and inclusion, that I wish individuals 3, 4, 5 years ago would have gotten ahead of these organizations, gotten ahead of these departments, and called them out. Very clearly called them out on what they were doing. Told them to get in line, get in check, and get to the actual meaning of diversity, equity, and inclusion. If that had happened 5 years ago, we wouldn't be having this debate this morning. You would not see these changes coming at the federal and state and local levels. You would not have this political conversation happening. But you guys sat on your hands because, of course, it was in favor of your political ideology to push forward DEI, because wrapped up in DEI was liberal progressive ideology. It was something that you agreed with, something that you supported, so you allowed it to run amok. Now there's a new sheriff in town. You've got a new administration that calls out DEI, called it out on the campaign trail. And now you've got major changes and major shakeups happening. There's nobody to blame but yourselves. You allowed these things to run out of control. You allowed this stuff to be taken over and weaponized by the left. And now you have to deal with the consequences of it. I'm sorry. I didn't choose this. I didn't make DEI turn into a political buzzword to push one political ideology or the other. I didn't do that. You guys did. And so now you have to deal with the consequences of that. I don't have any sympathy. I don't have any sorrow. You guys had years, as I've mentioned earlier, years to litigate this issue publicly, to convince the American people that that was not happening within DEI, that these departments, that these organizations, that these groups were bringing forth a better America for every individual, regardless of their background. You didn't do that. That's not what these agencies and these departments did. And so now it's being stripped out. It's being chopped off. And I think it's a good thing. Yes, I'm very much in favor of stripping out and gutting DEI. I don't think it brings us closer together as Americans. I don't think it heals any sort of racial divides that exist in our country. It doesn't do anything of that nature. It pits people against each other, and it creates more division. And we're doing it at a very young age with our public school students. We are sowing the seeds at 7, 8, 9, 10 years old with some of our youngest individuals. And for what? So that Democrats can push that America is inherently racist and we're on stolen land and all this other stupid bullshit that you hear from them all the time? That's what we're doing? That's what you guys wanted. You got it. But now there's individuals revolting against that and saying very clearly and very plainly, we don't subscribe and we do not agree with these radical teachings of DEI. You guys need to own this. It's your fault. Not mine, not Trump's, not the Republicans, not the conservatives. Your fault. You allowed this stuff to run out of control, and now it's being slapped back into reality. So I don't have any sympathy. I want diversity. I think when you have diverse thought, when you have diverse people looking at a problem, looking at an issue, trying to find a solution, you most of the time get to a better, find some sort of better solution going forward. When you are inclusive and to bring everybody to the table to have a discussion about whatever the topic is, you probably end with a better solution or better understanding of what's going on. DEI doesn't foster any of that stuff to happen. We shut people down who don't agree with us politically. We pit people against each other based on their sex, their race, their gender, their religious makeup, whatever it is. And what does that result in? These disastrous, destructive policies that we've seen unfold over the last couple of years in front of the American public. Not behind closed doors, not in smoke-filled rooms, but in the public, in your school systems, in your private businesses. We've seen it all play out publicly. And the revolt is happening right now. So I've got an interesting story over at CNN of all places this morning. As Target is facing a 40-day consumer boycott started yesterday over the company's shift away from diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. Nobody is forcing Target to change and move away from these policies. The federal government has no say over how Target operates. Their shareholders do. They're a publicly traded company, I believe. So this is a decision that they're making internally. And so if these DEI programs and policies are so fantastic and do all of these great things like the left professes, why is private business scrapping it? I can understand from the political standpoint why government is doing it, and you can make the argument, well, this is being done for a political agenda, and fine, I'll concede that point. But then how do you explain the private business side of it? How do you explain one of the largest brick-and-mortar shopping centers and brick-and-mortar businesses in the country, Target, why are they moving away from these policies? Why are they making these changes? Reverend Jamal Bryant, who is a prominent Atlanta area megachurch pastor who started the boycott, said in an interview with CNN, quote, "We're asking people to divest from Target because they have turned their back on our community." What community he's referring to, I have no idea. The boycott, which began during the start of Lent, comes more than a month after Target made changes to its DEI program, and at a difficult period for the company as it faces the onslaught of tariffs in the middle of a challenging economy. On a January 24th announcement, just days into Trump's presidency, Target announced it would be eliminating hiring goals for minority employees, ending an executive committee focused on radical justice and making other changes to its diversity initiatives. Target said it had a new strategy called Belonging to the Bullseye, which it's first introduced last year, and the company remained committed to, quote, creating a sense of belonging for our team, guests, and community. Target also stresses the need for staying in step with the evolving external landscape. So they're getting rid of their racially biased hiring practices. It says it right here. Target was eliminating its hiring goal for minority employees. That's what they're doing. The same thing that like Chapel Hill was doing with its admissions that was struck down by the United States Supreme Court. When you specifically discriminate against individuals based on their race, That's not diversity, equity, and inclusion. When you set up arbitrary metrics in regards to hiring goals and pass over qualified candidates based on their sex, based on their race, that's not diversity, equity, and inclusion. I don't know how many times that needs to be stated. That's not DEI. It's the complete opposite. You are actively discriminating against sex and race. There's no inclusion there. There's no equity there. There's no diversity there. You're actively discriminating against people. I thought that's what you guys wanted to get away from. Right? America's inherently racist. America's inherently this, inherently that. You guys are keeping this stuff going. You're actively discriminating against people based on their skin color. Target is one of a dozen Fortune 500 companies that have backtracked on DEI in response to conservative court decisions, pressure from activists, and right-wing legal groups. And more recently, the Trump administration's threat to investigate what it characterizes as illegal DEI. But they should, because we have fair hiring practices in America. We have a thing called equal opportunity employment. You see it all over websites all over the country and hear it at businesses. We are an EEO employer, equal opportunity employer, which means we don't discriminate against you based on your skin color, based on your sex. But that's exactly what's happening. No company has faced as fierce of a blowback from DEI supporters as Target. Customers online have protested the decision. Annie and Lucy Dayton, the daughters of one of Target's co-founders, called the company's actions a, quote, betrayal. So I guess they're okay with racial discrimination and gender discrimination on hiring practices. Target is under more pressure than companies like Walmart, John Deere, or Tractor Supply because Target went further in its DEI efforts and has a more progressive base of customers than those competitors. Target was a leading advocate for DEI programs in the business world in the years after George Floyd was murdered by police in the company's hometown of Minneapolis in 2022. Target also spent years building a public reputation as a progressive employer on LGBTQ issues. Lucy Bryant said, quote, "Black people spend upwards of $12 million a day, and so we would expect some loyalty and some decency and some camaraderie from Target." What does that have to do with anything? Who cares how much a race spends per day? If DEI truly erased all of these racial lines that you guys talked about, this wouldn't be an issue. I mean, the hypocrisy in these comments, the hypocrisy in these statements is laughable. Melissa Butler, the CEO of Lip Bar, we'll admit never heard of them, which is one of the largest black-owned makeup companies in America carried in Target, said on TikTok that she was disappointed about Target's DEI pullback, but she worries that the boycott could hurt black-owned businesses. She told the CNN, quote, "We don't want to see these minority businesses suffering or be impacted negatively." Target declined to comment to CNN about the boycott. A spokesperson for Target said that the company is still committed to inclusivity and offered a wide range of products, services, and items, including those that are owned by black-owned and minority vendors. So what's changing then? Their racially motivated hiring practices? I mean, reading from Target right here, hearing from the CEO of Lip Bar, all of these products are still going to be available in Target stores. Nothing is changing in regards to the products that they're stocking, but their racially based hiring practices, which I would contend and argue are absolutely illegal, those practices are going away. They should have never been in place originally, but now they're being stripped away. Customer visits to Target, Walmart, and Costco have slowed over the last 4 weeks, but they have dropped the most at Target, according to Placer.ai, which uses phone location data to track visits. The slowdown could also be attributed to weather, economic conditions, and other variables. So there's not actually necessarily a complete tie there. So this is what's going on. Private business is not being compelled to do this. They are choosing to do so. I think one of the big reasons is the legal aspect of it. CNN kind of buried that in their article. But there will be, and there is going to be more lawsuits against these companies, just like what we saw against the admissions nonsense over at Chapel Hill and Harvard, where they were actively discriminating against people based on their race. You are going to see this taking place in small business, as you should. We should not, I don't know why this has to be proclaimed, but I'll do it anyway. We should not be hiring individuals based on their skin color. We should not be hiring individuals based on their gender or their sex. We should not be hiring people based on their religious background. We should be hiring the best people fit for the job, regardless of whether they're black or white, whether they're a male or female, whether they're Christian or Jewish or Muslim. It doesn't matter. Hire the best person. I don't know how that and why that needs to be proclaimed, but it does. We don't need these nonsensical, discriminatory hiring practices in America. It's not diverse. It's not equitable. It's not inclusive. You guys have completely missed and shot over the narrative on this whole thing. You have completely fumbled the ball on DEI. I don't know what the hell you guys were thinking. But you have. And again, now there's a new administration. The public has not been in favor of these policies for quite some time. And now you're starting to see the rollbacks. And you, again, have nobody to blame but yourself. So this is going to continue both in the, you know, public sector. We're talking about governments, schools, that Senate bill that we were talking about. And in the private sector, businesses like Target, John Deere, Costco, Walmart, as they roll back these policies, because guess what? It opens them to major amounts of litigation. And if there's one thing that business doesn't like, it's threatening them with a lawsuit. It's threatening them with multi-million, if not billion-dollar legal challenges over their discriminatory practices. I can promise you, no matter how woke a business claims that they are, how progressive a business claims that they are, the second there's the threat of serious litigation over what they're doing, they'll cut out whatever stuff they're doing. Because business cannot afford that. They are not in the business of getting sued. Not even close. So that's the latest update on DEI this morning. We'll keep an eye on it and appreciate the conversation between Kevin Spears. I'm going to shoot him a note on X this afternoon and invite him on to talk about it because I think it's a good conversation. And I don't think we're really that far apart on what's being discussed. I, as like he does, I want diversity. I want inclusion. I want equity between individuals. What I don't want is weaponized agencies from the left. I'm not in favor of that. So we'll continue the conversation. It's likely to be a long-standing one here on the Nick Craig Show. As we turn our attention to DOGE and the impact locally, two Wilmington businesses are included on a list of government leases to be terminated under a federal savings initiative. The leases on two Wilmington buildings are being terminated by the General Service Administration, that's GSA, according to the Department of Government Efficiency's website. The Internal Revenue Service Taxpayer Assistance Center and a former U.S. Army Corps of Engineers warehouse are listed on a list of 748 lease terminations that total over $660 million in federal savings. The IRS center located in the Randall Building right off of Randall Parkway will save $239,000 of annual lease costs of the annual lease cost of $319,000. The termination is listed under mass modifications, a government-initiated modification that occurs when a uniform change is made. This is similar to refreshing the terms and conditions of a contract, according to the GSA website. The government leases a whopping 14,165 square feet of office space in the building, according to GSA documents. This is less than half of the total square footage of the building, with the New Hanover County Child Support and New Hanover and North Carolina Vocational Rehabilitation occupying suites at the property as well. A company known as Albito Corp is listed as the leaser for the IRS Center. A representative from the company declined to provide comment on the termination to the Star News when reached by phone, and the IRS did not immediately respond to questions via phone and email. The second building that is being discussed, the former U.S. Army Corps of Engineers warehouse, that's located at 68 Darlington Avenue, is expected to save $83,934. The more than 4,000 square foot building is across the street from the agency's Wilmington headquarters. The DOGE website includes the building on its list of savings, but the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Public Affairs Officer Dave Conley said the agency had already begun the termination process before it was added to the list, saying, quote, we were already close to being final on the process to vacate that building and terminate the lease. The fact that it is on the list simply accelerates the process that we had already started. Great. So the Army Corps of Engineers was getting ready to cancel the lease. Hopefully DOGE and their list on this website expedites the process, speeds it up, so the federal government doesn't continue leasing this for another 6, 8, 12, 2 years, however many more months or years, as they slow walk the process to actually getting rid of the lease. The annual cost of the lease is $53,000 a year and is listed as a true termination with the agency office closed. The original lease was due to terminate in May of 2026, and the agency had no intention of renewing it. Connolly said the agency began taking steps to vacate the building approximately 1 year ago. 1 year. This should have been already done. See, folks, when we talk about government efficiency, and what's going on with DOGE, right? This is it right here. The Army Corps of Engineers had already been out of this building for apparently a year at this point. It should have taken no more than at most 6, maybe 8 months to get out of that building fully. In private business, you don't carry an extra lease unless you're, of course, obligated to by law and you can't terminate it. You don't just carry an extra lease for the hell of it for 6, 8 months or up towards of a year. That is a massive, we're talking about $53,000. That's a full-time employee salary. That's even lower than the annual salary here in New Hanover County, but close to it, that you're carrying on your books as you slow walk the process of closing the lease out. The DOGE website estimates a total of $105 billion in savings due to a variety of cutbacks, including asset sales and workforce reduction. Research conducted by New America found hundreds of millions of dollars in discrepancies between actual savings and the DOGE estimates, of course. New America, some left-leaning polling group here that decided that they were going to go forward and put this through, that they are a self-described American liberal think tank. So what the information coming out of them is not fair, is not unbiased, yet the Star News, of course, doesn't point that out in their article. They just say research conducted by New America, which should say New America, a left-leaning think tank, a liberal think tank. But of course, they don't include that because the Star News is just exactly the same as they are. When asked about the lease termination in February, a GSA spokesperson provided the following statement to the Star News. The acting administrator of visions for GSA includes reducing our deferred maintenance liabilities, supporting the return to office for federal employees, and taking advantage of a stronger private/government partnership in managing the workforce for the future. GSA is reviewing all options to optimize our footprint and building utilization. GSA is actively working with our tenant agencies to assist their space needs and fully optimize the federal footprint. And we'll be able to share more information on specific savings and facilities soon. A total of 20 North Carolina properties are included on the list for lease terminations as of March 3rd. Leases on multiple buildings in Greensboro, Charlotte, and Raleigh are set to be terminated. They are all over the place. In the country and really, or in the state. And with that, only 20 is pretty remarkable because there are a whole bunch of GSA buildings just here in Wilmington. You've got 14 GSA buildings that have leases here as of January. So out of the state as a whole, only 20 properties being cut out, I would argue, is a very small amount across the state as a whole. I'll have a link to this article over in our show notes this morning over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. I've got one final thing for you this morning. We spent yesterday's show. If you missed it, I encourage you to check out the podcast or watch on YouTube or Rumble. Yesterday's program where we did a deep dive in discussion of President Donald Trump's joint address to Congress, not a State of the Union address, that took place on Tuesday night. And with that, there was, of course, the Democrat representative by the name of Al Green, who was thrown out of the joint address because he refused to follow the decorum of the House of Representatives. He was yelling and screaming at Trump. He was wagging his cane as if this was some, you know, political duel from the mid-1800s that was going on. He was acting a fool. He was acting like an idiot. He was clearly told, Mr. Green, sit down. Mr. Green, come to order. He chose not to do that, which he has the right to do. He can be told to do so, and he doesn't have to follow it. And the result of that, we talk about actions and consequences. The consequences of his actions were he was thrown out of the joint hearing, or thrown out of the joint address from Trump. He decided that he was going to break decorum. He decided that he was going to ignore House Speaker Mike Johnson. And because of those decisions, he was thrown out. Plain and simple. Actions have consequences. Well, here is a representative from California, Representative Simon, a Democrat out of California. This is what she had to say on MSNBC in regards to Al Green being thrown out.
Seems like a blatant disrespect for the House, and it wasn't coming from Representative Green. It was coming from the men behind him on the right side who were telling him and yelling, sit down. I mean, it felt like I was watching something in a history class of racists yelling at an elderly black man challenging the president of the United States not to cut medical care for the sick. What have seems like,
I mean, it doesn't get any more pathetic than that. So in a typical Democrat fashion, Al Green wanted to act like a jackass during Trump's joint address to Congress on Tuesday night. He was warned to sit down, to get in order. He chose not to do that. House Speaker Mike Johnson threw him out of the chamber. And what is the result? Well, it was a bunch of racists yelling at an elderly black man. So I guess we live in a society where actions no longer have consequences anymore. I guess that's what Representative Simon out of California believes is the path forward. You should be allowed to do whatever the hell you want, and there should be no consequences for your action. And by the way, if you're a black, elderly black man doing it, anybody that argues against it, anybody that calls you out on your actions, the way that you're portraying yourself, they're just racists. It doesn't get any more pathetic than that. This is the Democrat race card that they've been pulling for decades now. And it's ridiculous. Everything around them is just, everything is race. No, nobody's ever held accountable for what they do. Through the eyes of the Democrats, everything is based on race. They are the most racist political party that exists in our society. Everything is race. Why couldn't she just go on MSNBC and say, Al Green was yelling and screaming, he was told not to, and he had to be thrown out because he couldn't behave himself? He was warned multiple times by House Speaker Mike Johnson to come in order and to act like a sitting member of Congress. He chose not to do that, and he had to face the consequences of it. But it's not his fault. It's those racist damn Republicans striking once again. Keep with this messaging, guys. Keep running down this rabbit trail. Enjoy it. You are only polarizing more and more of the middle block of the American voter base over to the right. They watched what Al Green did. They saw him be warned. They saw him be told to just come in order. He chose not to do so, and he had to pay the price for that. So this whole idea that it was like a history cartoon with a bunch of white racists yelling at an elderly black man is just so absurd. But yet again, we're talking about a Democrat from California, so I guess that kind of goes par for the course, right? That's pretty much all they do out in California is say and make up absurd things. Not necessarily surprised, but I thought it was a pretty interesting clip to bring to you this morning from Representative Simon, a wonderful Democrat out of California. I'm sure she's got some great ideas up in Congress. So, yeah, great stuff. I'll throw that link over as well in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Well, as I mentioned yesterday, I am off tomorrow traveling for a wedding. So no show for a Friday. However, we will be back bright and early Monday morning, 7 a.m. streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for joining me for the Nick Craig Show. Have a great weekend. We're back with you Monday morning right here.